So welcome to, I guess, second breakout session of today. My name is Mariusz Ostrowski. I'm from Poland, and I'm employee of Microsoft Consulting Services, UC architect there.
And I'm not Craig Hill. I'm Justo Oreja from Spain, from the same team as Mariusz, the Enterprise Communications Center of Excellence.
Right, and welcome to our Enterprise Networking with Link 2013 Network Bandwidth and QS Requirements session. I made it with one breath. And guys, just for the logistics, I believe we are asked to keep the, we are asked to ask you to keep the questions till the end, because we want to capture the questions like in a Q&A session. We'll try to keep at least 10 or 15 minutes for you for a Q&A. If you badly need to ask the question, please try to kind of like, well, ask it, but then we might postpone the answer till the Q&A, till the end, okay? Or ideally keep the question till the end. All right, so what that session is all about? What are our objectives towards that session? Basically, the session is intended to give you a better understanding of the scope of QoS, not just Link QoS. We want to talk slightly broader here, right? We want to explain to you and discuss with you certain things that, like, networking people from networking department might be discussing with you if you are Link designer or Link consultant or whoever who deals with Link only. And these networking people are coming and asking kind of strange questions. That's where we want to do about the QoS. And also, we want to discuss in the second section the bandwidth requirements. Again, not perhaps in a like high-level detail, but in a detail level that would give you you'll be able to discuss that with the networking department. All right, so agenda. Really quickly, intro, very short one, I'll take it. Then Justo will take over for the QoS section, and then I'll be back for the network bandwidth with Link 2013. And if demo gods are with us, we'll have a very cool live demo for you in the middle between the QoS and network bandwidth sections. But wait for that, I'll explain the demo when we get there. All right, so the intro section. Let's set up the stage here. All right, so why is planning of the network so important? Why do you have to care about the network and all these things about the QoS stuff and for Link? Haven't Microsoft told you for years that there is no need for QoS, there's no real need for good planning of the network because Link will just run? Guess what? Well, it's not necessarily what's the reality of today, as we started to learn a couple of months ago, years ago actually, partially based on like things like Premiere, statistics from Premiere, which were telling us that basically, network can cause issues to Link if we try to stretch Link capabilities too far. Basically, we tried to look at the statistics from our Premiere support, and we figured out that almost half of the cases that were logged to the Premiere support were related to networking. Cases where the Link audio, Link voice was impacted. Now, I have to make a statement. In the first section, we'll be primarily focusing on audio, but the same principles apply to Link video, right? It's just easier to explain certain things for the audio. And basically, based on the fact that we kind of started understanding and learning that, yes, network has impact on Link or might have an impact on Link audio and video calls, that's where we start thinking about this impact. So what is the impact? What are impairments of the network, or rather, what impairments could happen to Link audio because of the network? This is well-known stuff. I hope everybody recognizes these terms. If you don't, I can go later on 101, and I can explain what could be the impact of jitter or what could be a different impact of latency on the Link audio traffic and on the perception of it. So we are not going to dive really deep into that one, right? The important point is they do have impact. Too much of a latency, too much of a packet jitter, too much of a packet loss can impact the audio traffic. Of course, the question comes, what's too much? That's a completely different conversation, and we could be taking like another 2 hours for that. I would refer you to the Link Networking Guide that has been published on the TechNet. The version of 2 of Networking Guide has been published in January 2014. It gives you a good understanding what levels of latency, jitter, packet loss can Link survive, and what should be kind of like optimal conditions for Link in the network. So we are not going to dive into that. I'm sorry about that. If you expected me to say a link can go for 100% of the packet loss, no, I'm not going to say it. That was meant to be a joke, guys. 100% packet loss means all packets are lost, right? Thank you, sir. Okay, so actually, so the first point is, right, they can affect audio, they can affect video. Actually, they can also affect some other link modalities, like desktop chain code, IMVP. These are slightly more prone. They will not be affected to that extent as audio and video. The question is why? That's a question towards you guys. I'm trying to wake you up after lunch. No, it's not about the bandwidth. It is also about the bandwidth, so you are partially right. Thank you. No goodies, sorry, for the good answers. The answer is really because the audio and video link is primarily carried on in what's called UDP packets, right, in the network, and they are more prone to packet loss and jitter and latency. Well, latency actually affects both UDP and the TCP. TCP is type of traffic that's being used for carrying IMN presence and things like desktop chain. So desktop chain and IMN presence are kind of like slightly well protected at the network layer, if you wish. Like audio and video are slightly less protected. And there are reasons for that, again, beyond the scope of our session, but networking guide kind of discussed that at length. Now, before we go into the any further discussion, I was just trying to let a ground here that the networking can be affecting, right? Now, Husto will take you through how can we protect what needs to be protected. And that's the story of the QS. And I'll be back.
Thank you, Marius, for the introduction. So let's look at QS. QS is not just a technology, it's a combination of technologies, okay? So in this presentation, we're gonna look at QS from the network side of things, the networking team, and then from the link side of things, the link administrator, what the link administrator needs to do. But we like also, the whole point of the presentation is to say that just configuring link QoS in the link side is not enough, right? You need to make sure you speak to a network administrator and you are aligned on how the QoS is gonna be configured. So QoS is really a combination of technologies that enable organizations to protect the real-time traffic, audio and video, okay? So when do we use quality of service? We use quality of service when the bandwidth is limited. But that's not true. I mean, we should be using, our recommendation is to use quality of service always, right? Because network congestions will happen. Even if you have quite a lot of bandwidth available, just a simple file transfer or a virus update, antivirus update, whatever, might congest the network for a certain period of time. So quality of service is a health insurance, right? It's something that we apply in the network and in link to protect our traffic and make sure that the quality is good. So again, it's another reference to the networking guide, and think about quality of service as end-to-end. And think about the media, the audio and video media is bidirectional. So we are sending traffic from A to B and from B to A. And we need to make sure that that traffic is protected in both directions. One direction only is not enough. So you could end up having good quality. So A to B is okay, but the other direction is not good. And one person will hear the audio fine, but the other one will not. So we put this slide here. It's just a reference to a white paper from Microsoft IT. We used to say in the OCS times that our codecs are like magic and we can recover from anything happening in the network. I mean, the codecs are good. Up to a certain limit, we can recover from that, but it's not perfect, right? It's not there's always a limit that we will have a bad quality in the audio and the video. And I pick up this sentence from that white paper that says we experience a significant increase in quality after uniformly enforcing and auditing QoS. This is from Microsoft IT. So we saw a huge improvement in the quality after applying QoS. Uniformly enforcing means QoS is end-to-end. in both directions. And auditing is means make sure that you check that that is how it's working, right? That the DHCP marking or the QoS is not broken somewhere in the path of the network, because we find that that happens quite often. So what are the QoS mechanisms? The bottom line is that we want to treat different types of traffic in different ways, not only the link traffic, but also there are other applications in the network, like email, CRM, whatever it is. But even within the link traffic, we can differentiate between audio, video, and desktop sharing, signaling, whatever we want to do. So we have different ways to treat the traffic. And then the network will read the QoS, however we are configuring the QoS. So we need to explain, the way to explain a QoS is that one thing of the QoS is to mark the traffic. So I'm marking the traffic in a certain way that we'll see it in a minute. And the other concept is classification. How does the network read that marking? And what does the network do with that marking? And there are different types of QoS that we're gonna see in the presentation. So I really like this picture, because it's self-explanatory, right? Once you see this, you don't need to talk about QoS anymore. In the left-hand side, the gray area is the whole pipe, the whole network bandwidth that is available in that particular pipe. Okay? So what we do with QoS is that we build those virtual pipes that you see there in different colors. And we do a few things with that. We set up what is the percentage of the total pipe or of the total network that is going to be available for a specific type of traffic. And we're going to tell with QoS what is the priority, what traffic should have preference on top of what other traffic. And that's what you see in that picture. Okay, in this case, for example, EF is the audio traffic, is the red at the top, is the highest priority. I may say this is 10% of the total amount of bandwidth available. Then it's video, etc. And then I can decide also, what do I do when that pipe gets full? Do I drop the packets or do I use other queues? That's part of the QoS configuration, that you need to work with your network engineer and understand how is it done to configure a link, okay? And agree again between the both of you what you want to do. So then we have classification methods, okay? You have to differentiate between two main types. One is the layer two, at the LAN level or switching level. And then is the layer three, this is a routing level, okay? So in layer two, we have VLAN priority and 802.1p. VLAN priority doesn't work for us anymore, okay? Because VLAN priority is when you set up multiple VLANs, and whatever you plug into that VLAN will be prioritized. All the traffic normally is for the IP phones, the traditional way of doing QoS in the past with IP phones. Everything that is in that VLAN will be prioritized over the rest of the traffic. It doesn't work for link because our main endpoint is the link client, and the link client is in the PC. And if you plug the whole PC into a VLAN, everything is prioritized, not link, all the traffic. Okay? Same for 802.1p. 802.1p, you need a specific cards, but we see network cards, but we see this as a legacy way of doing QoS. And also, now the LANs have plenty of bandwidth. We see gigabit LANs, where usually, if you have problems at that level, you have bigger problems. So what we see more often is layer three classification methods. And these are the most common that we see, the port-based and DHCP marking. Port-based means that I can separate the different types of traffic in link with different port ranges, and then the network will look at that port range and do whatever we want to do, give it different priorities. So I can say my audio traffic is from port 40,000 to 40,039, whatever it is. My video traffic is from 50,000 to 50,039, and so on. The network will read that that configuration and prioritize the traffic. The problem with port base is that it's very cumbersome for the network engineer. Any change in the QoS, they will have to apply that change in multiple routers, multiple devices. So what we see more common at the WAN level is the DHCP marking. So this is the standard way of doing QoS in layer 3. Okay? So what we do is that we mark the traffic in the PC with a specific DHCP value, depending of the workload that we want to differentiate, audio, video, or signaling, or whatever. And the network device will read that marking and classify the traffic and do whatever they want to do, whatever we want to do with the traffic. Okay. So this is another visual view of QoS. On the left-hand side, you see all the packets that are going through the network without order, how they reach the network device, and the network device will classify that traffic and send that traffic through the different queues, whatever the number of queues that we are setting up in the network. Okay? And then the scheduler sent out the traffic out of the network device with the priority that we want to give. Something that we want to mention too is the priority queue, the concept of the priority queue. That is something that you also hear quite often. Priority queue is just the queue that has the highest priority. Okay, that's all. And then you can, this picture is just here to show you how things can get quite complex, right? Usually, we don't see this level of detail in QoS. I don't see customers doing however many queues are here or classifying so many different types of traffic. But the point here is that you don't need to go into too much detail from the link perspective. You just need to talk to the network engineer, explain what you want to do with the traffic, how much of the traffic you want to prioritize, what the audio differentiate between audio and video, et cetera. But you don't need to be an expert in QoS or a Cisco expert to be able to have that conversation. Okay? So please don't memorize this picture. You don't need to. And again, think about what we see in global customers, the biggest customers, that they may have multiple MPLS clouds. Those MPLS clouds may have different QoS settings or QoS policies or domains. QoS has to be global, the same configuration has to be applied globally in the network, because if not, QoS is broken. In this example, in the remote site, we are classifying video with DHCP 36 and 26, but in the central site, in the main campus, the video is 36. So if I'm sending video from the remote site with DHCP 26, as soon as it reaches the network, it will not be prioritized, right? Because we see this quite often, especially with customers that have multiple MPLS clouds from different service providers. So again, back to what I said at the beginning about auditing. This is not just unconfiguring QoS in link and it should work. It doesn't work like that. You need to audit it, make sure the DHCP marking is going from end to end, from one PC to another. Okay, what about link? What do we need to do in link? So with link, the usual way, we can do QoS by port or QoS by DHCP, but we usually do DHCP. So there are group policies in Active Directory that you apply to the PCs and you basically configure the QoS as agreed with the network team. Just one advice here, if you are migrating from OCS or Lean 2010 to Lean 2013, the name of the application in the client has changed. It used to be communicator.exe, and now it's link.exe. So if you don't change that, the policy for Lean 2013, QS will not work. So make sure that if you are in a migration process, that you check that out. What about other endpoints? And we're talking all the time about the client, but we have other endpoints or other media devices, other devices that can work with media, like the AV pool, the edge server, the mediation server. Those also need to mark the traffic. So, for example, think about the SIP trunk, traffic coming through the SBC to the mediation server. If I don't mark the traffic in the mediation server, that traffic is not prioritized. Same for the edge server, IP phones. So any device or any endpoint, any server that is managing media should be also classifying, marking traffic. Those so the group policy policies that I saw earlier work also for the server. So you can apply that at the server level. So again, another reference to the networking guide. We love this networking guide. So also, we are talking all the time about DHCP 46. This is the default for DHCP, the industry default. But make sure, again, you check that out with your network provider, because we're seeing some providers that they don't use the default. They may use DHCP 40 for audio. And again, if we don't do 40 for audio in our site, QoS is broken. How do I check, how do I audit that the quality of service is working? Just use a network monitoring tool, for example, Netmon. Run it on the PC, look at the media traffic, at the RTP traffic, and make sure the DHCP marking is leaving your PC and also arriving to your PC. So the media coming to your PC, it comes with the DHCP marking that is expected, and the same in the other end. There is a blog from one of our colleagues that is there for you for reference that explains really well how to do this audit and make sure it's a step-by-step guide on how to do that checking. And also use the monitoring server. The monitoring server is your friend here. In Lean 2010, we, in OCS, we required a different server, a specific server role that was separated from the pool to do monitoring. In Lean 2013, that server is part of the pool. So there is no reason why not to deploy monitoring server. And it's the tool to go and check when you have quality issues, audio quality issues or video quality issues, to check the reports and make sure you know how to read it, look at the media flow in both directions and understand what is going on. Basically, it's your friend, okay? So now is demo time. Some of the stuff that I've been talking about, we're gonna see it in the demo. So hopefully we will be able to show you.
Yeah, so I guess the things will become slightly more clear after we go through the demo. So we talk about all that QoS and that you have to be kind of like in sync with your networking administrator and check all those things. But then, you know, before I go to the demo, we kind of like used to, links works anyway, right? You go to the hotel and there's work, it's working there. You don't need the QoS. Well, the point of the demo is to show you that in enterprise networks that go under congestion conditions, you might need really to think about the QoS. That's the point of the demo, number one. Point number two of the demo will be, now, if I decide to go QoS, how am I can be sure that it works? And if it doesn't work, how to troubleshoot the issues? Now, we have limited time, so we'll not be going really deep, but we'll be probably slightly touching like in a 400 level. So for those of you who are not used to reading things like network traces, whatever, don't leave the room yet. There will be some other easier content later on. But first I need to explain the demo. The setup is very simple. So here we have a site A, which is the data center site on the top of the screen, in which we have a client A. I will be using client A from my laptop in a moment. I'll explain them on. And then you have a site E down in the bottom of the screen, in which we'll have a client B and client E. Those two clients, client B will be used by Husto actually on his laptop right here, but he'll be stepping out from the room for the demo for a moment. Now, between site data center and the site E, we have the one network. We actually have the real network, well, kind of real network. There is actual Cisco router sitting in there that we will use to demonstrate certain things when it comes to the QS. Now, we will make a couple of audio calls. Again, remember, similar principles apply to video. In first call, we will just need to establish a baseline. So the first call will be kind of like an uncongested network. Things are good, no congestion. We should have a pretty decent quality of the call, again, if the gods of the demos are with us. Now, the second call that we'll make, well, actually, before making the second call, I will try to apply the congestion on the network. The congestion will be kind of like artificially created, but however, we try to do it kind of like as close as possible to real conditions. So we are using file transfer. I'll be just copying files. You'll see that in a moment, right? And those files will be actually copied. Apologies about that. Let me just go back. Those files will be copied to my like file server in a data center, right? And then for some reason my slide is gone, but the point is there will be another call, right? For some reason the second call is just gone. Okay, so let's switch on to the demo now, because that's what matters. And yes, let me just see if I can switch properly to my demo machine. Okay, so here's our first call. Let me just prepare a little bit environment for you to see what's going to happen here. Okay, my colleague Husto is stepping out from the room right now because obviously we need to have the like a call without any feedback. And I have to warn you, there might be some strange thing happening because of some noise in the corridor there. And also for this kind of testing, right? You have to be slightly artificial on the way you are doing the testing. So please don't laugh at the way we are carrying it on. Just bear with us. And also because it's important that you hear the difference. So try to concentrate on hearing, not watching on the screen, at least from that moment on. Okay, so I'm gonna ask Husto now to step out from the room, and I'll ask him to give me a call. So let me just, his link is actually like Garrett. He's now Garrett. So please call me. And before he calls me, let me just use my headset. That will help me. Okay, so let's see. So Husto is calling me right now. Let me answer the call. Hello, Husto. I'm saying one now.
I'm saying two now.
I'm saying three now.
I'm saying four now.
I'm saying five now.
I'm saying six now.
Okay, thank you very much. So that was a good quality call, wasn't it? Right? I mean, stupid things that were said, but the point was, yes, it was a good quality call, right? It wasn't about the content, it was about the audio quality, guys, right? So let me just prove to you that this is a good quality call, right? A very short proof, we'll go a link monitoring server here. That'll be short, hopefully, if I can only find the proper window here on my screen. There you go. So link monitoring server, we told you about it. That's the place to go. I will try to find that call in the reports of the link monitoring server. And that should be our last call, actually, that one, 2:27 p.m., that's right, that's the one. Audio call, let me go into the more detail. The moment I start getting the reports, I can point you to the proper part of the link monitoring report for this particular call. So what do I see here? The important things to note is that it was Garrett Vargas calling me, Emmy. So he was caller, I'm colleague here, right? And then the call was direct. It was not using any Edge server. And basically now let's go into the, that call was carried using the UDP protocol. That's the direct that I was referring to. UDP protocol, which I mentioned. Now the most important thing is here, slightly below. Yes, audio stream, caller to callee. So Husto to me, so Garrett to Emmy. As you can see, pretty low jitter, almost no latency, and the packet loss is zero, which is great. Yeah, no packet loss. And so now, because the network is empty, let me try to congest that network a little bit. So what we have here, and I just need to sign in, that second workstation that I was mentioning, the e-workstation, which is sitting in the same location that Husto is in. Let me just sign in. Sometimes you just have to do it slowly. There you go. So that workstation in that side branch site where Husto is in is having a file transfer. Well, not yet. I need to start it. So let me start it, right? So that workstation is having, now we are transferring to data center. So the network starts becoming congested. We'll let a little bit, we'll let that file transfer to start actually. That should be in a moment kind of transferring files. Now, one thing that I haven't told you is that we actually also artificially decrease the size of the link between those two network sites. The size of the one link, the connection between these two sites is 512 kilobits per second. So even with the file transfer, simple file transfer, actually I'm transferring two files simultaneously, I can create congestion here. Obviously, again, for the lab, it's kind of artificial situation, but in reality, if you would have a slightly bigger pipe, you can still have a congestion. Now, again, I'll ask my colleague who's going to step out from the room, and I'll ask him to place the call. Now, the call is going through the network that is really congested. So let me just ask him, because he needs to know where to call me, after all. So call me, please. I want to be nice to him. All right, so let's wait for his call. Now concentrate on the audio. It's important. Hello, Husto. This is Mariusz, and I'm saying one now.
I'm saying two now.
I'm saying three now.
Four now.
I'm saying five now.
I'm saying six now.
Okay, thank you. So you might have heard during the, when he was saying, I'm saying three now, there was some impact on the quality of the call. It's really hard to put a link on his knees, or its knees, right? But we kind of like managed, it wasn't really kind of like well proved, so let me prove it to you that it wasn't a good quality call. So again, going to the, going to my, and see that's the file transfer is still going on, so let me just go to the, to my monitoring server reports. Again, I'm gonna search for my last call. So let's see, let's see the latest reports from latest calls. 10:33 should be the call, okay. I'm still not have, okay, let me just search for something like that. 2:40. And so this is the, come on, give me those reports, please. Okay, once again, yeah. It works better if I click on it. So, 231, I think that will be the one. That's the call that Husto was calling me, and that was the one when we heard something during that call, that some things weren't really good. And here, if I go, oh, there you go. Caller to callee. Link monitoring server definitely confirms what we kind of did not hear, but if you pay attention, you could hear that. There is a packet loss going on that line, like 10% at that time on average during the call. Quite good, quite big latency. Also in the other direction, I have like 10% packet loss. That's why the congestion wasn't that bad yet. To be honest, when we started all file transfer, I should have given them like a couple of minutes to kind of like start really congesting that network. We don't have that much time, but you could hear it. Now, here's the point. We need to start fixing things here because otherwise users will start complaining, right? The more congestion, the more packet loss and so on. We need to start fixing things. So, yes.
The media in the other
Yes. So this is the Justo to me, caller to Coley, right? And then this is me talking to Justo. So basically, the call was affected in both directions, right? Now, important thing to note at this point, right? It was affected. Now, before Justo steps down from the room, I need to start fixing things. So what do I do? I need to apply the QS here. Now, believe it or not, but we already started applying QS here, except we stopped at a certain moment, right? What we did before we actually started the session, and I'll try to show it really quickly. What we did really before starting the session is like we already started marking those packets. Let me just go there. That workstation, except I'm on the wrong workstation. That's not the one. I need to go to the client. Right here. So once again. Okay. That workstation, very much like Justo's workstation, you cannot see his screen, but you please trust me, it's exactly the same setup on his workstation. If I go Windows Settings, and there is a policy-based QS, and here in policy-based QS, what we have here is actually the policy that says if it's a link traffic, audio traffic, because it's going on certain ports, and we know upfront that these are the ports because we configured them, and we didn't want to do it in front of your eyes, not that we cannot do it, hopefully we can, but it's because it takes time a little bit. So we are just showing you that we started configure. But what we haven't done yet is we haven't set up the QS in the network, really, right? So that's why this particular call, the second call, was affected. Even if I'm marking the traffic with the proper QS setting, in this case 46, and the network is not ready yet, that won't help. You will have an effect on the audio traffic. So I have a call marked, but I'm not properly handling that thing in the network. So let me go on the network. Now I'm taking my link admin hat off, and I'm putting my Cisco network admin hat on, and I'm going network here. I keep losing my mouse for some reason here. Sorry about that. There we go. Okay. So now I'll go to the and that's what I don't need. What I need is this thing. Some of you might recognize that. That's a CLI or command line interface of the Cisco router. So what's in the Cisco router in here, and I'll just try to show it really quickly, and there are some policies here. It's kind of cryptic for most of you, probably, but there are some policies here, and actually this is the policy that we need to refer to. Let me just go really quickly. And this is the policy that these were leftovers from my video demo. So this is the policy that I will be kind of correcting, because that policy currently says, okay, this is 512 kilobits link, right? This is one link of 512 kilobits, and we are having some additional parameters here, and so far I'm only saying there will be a signaling traffic going on that network. I don't yet have ready the QS for the audio traffic. That's what I'm going to fix now. So let me just fix it really quickly for you. So if my Cisco configuration skills are still with me, let me just do the fix is really simple. I just need to, again, do a little bit of cheating here with you guys, because I don't type, I will just paste. So what I'm doing is I'm adding what Justo referred to as a priority queue. The priority queue is added here for the link audio traffic. It's already defined. I'm just saying for the link audio traffic, I'm having certain part of that WAN link available for just exclusively for the link traffic. That's the kind of like concept of a QS. This is the class for link audio. That's what I did right now here. Okay, so now before we go on, and let us do another test call to prove to you that things were corrected. Let me just start, because it makes things easier. Let me start the capture here. So again, network is congested. Now QS is applied. And we are making another test call just to prove you that things were corrected, okay? So call me again. Yes. Again, third call, listen to it. Hello, Justo. I'm saying one now.
I'm saying two now.
I'm saying three now.
I'm saying four now.
I'm saying five now.
I'm saying six now.
I'm saying seven now. Ah, he killed the call. Now, guys, you couldn't hear it, but you could see the indicator in the link which I was pointing to on the screen that was saying something's really wrong here. Yeah, again, sometimes gods of the demos are not with us. That call was supposed to be affected in terms of quality. But I fixed the network, didn't I? So why would it be affected? First, let's make sure that it was affected, okay? Yes, so I will go once again to our monitoring server, which is right here. And yes, and with the monitoring server, let me just again show you the reports from the report from the last call. So it's not 231 call. Let's just search for something like, let's say, 250. And now view report. So that was the last call. Now, the point I'm trying to make here, we tried to amend something, but, well, it did not work. And I'll explain the reason in a moment. That's why I needed netmon here. So again, say third call, we have the QoS applied. Look at that. So the QoS, well, it that did not really help, did it? At least in this direction, we are observing 4% of the packet loss. Well, in this direction, we have a very minor packet loss, almost 0%. So we actually corrected something. You remember previous call? Things were bad in both directions. But here, in that call, we are having only one direction that is affected. The other, well, you see the latency. So there's something really wrong yet in the network. Now, well, let me do a little analysis here. So I applied the QoS on the link. Network admin applied QoS in the network. Still doesn't work. Someone is lying here. So let's do a further investigation. And the investigation will need that network trace. So the investigation will follow. And I will just look at the network trace from the link client in my workstation for that third call. And let's see at the audio. So how do I find the audio? So I need to know the IP addresses of the PCs that were involved. And then I will find the UDP stream. And actually, NetMon will be so kind for me to tell me that this is the RT audio because we're having a peer-to-peer call. And I'm 172.16.10.223 and 10.10.125 is Husto. Please believe me, these are the IP addresses. So I'm going there, and I'm just trying to figure out if I'm sending to him, am I applying DHCP settings really? Because now I'm looking at the wire, what's happening on the Ethernet wire. Of course, the virtual one here. But let's see. So UDP, IP, and yes, I'm doing the job properly. I'm sending to him properly configured and marked packets. Let's see what I'm getting from, there you go. Well, I've told you, you should trust me. His workstation is marking the traffic, but I'm not getting the traffic marked. Remember when Husto told you about things like verify, audit, and especially in cases when you have multiple providers, there might be situations in the network where the network is not configured properly and sometimes removes those DHCP markings. Even if you, as a link admin, set them in both workstations, networks remove them. By mistake of the configuration, whatever. But actually, that was a mistake of the configuration, which I kind of introduced without telling you. And guess what? I just found that mistake in the configuration. I'm gonna fix it then, right? I'm gonna fix it for you. And really quickly, I will go once again on my Cisco router here, and I will fix it for you. What I actually did is I artificially created certain policy in a Cisco router that basically says remove the DHCP packets, DHCP markings when Husto is sending them to me. So it's a network removing DHCP markings in those packets coming to me. So let me just remove that artificial kind of like mistake in the network, if you wish, and we will try to make yet another call again just to prove that things were working fine. So I'll just, before we start, I'll start another network capture. just to make sure that our troubleshooting session is was proper. And then, yes, we are good to have another call me one more time. Well, hi, whatever. Hi, Husto, I'm saying one now.
I'm saying two now.
I'm saying three now.
I'm saying four now.
I'm saying five now.
I'm saying six now.
Thank you, Husto. Come back, please. So if you noticed, the quality of that call was almost equal, or actually equal, to the quality of the very first call that we made as a reference. Yeah, trust me on that. It was. If you don't, let's go to the link monitoring reports. Okay? Guys, for the last time today, 400 level, and then we are going to go on an easy stuff. So again, that's my last call of the day. Let's see. Yes, I should be looking at something that lasted at 246, it's right, 246, 244, probably that's the one. We might have our clock in the link server slightly deviating from the real time. Anyway, so that was our last call, and guess what? This is our... All right, so now look at that. Well, almost no packet loss, almost no jitter. We are like back to the previous conditions. Things are good, Husto to me. And here, again, well, there is some packet loss. There is a congestion network, and then there is minor jitter, minor stuff. So guys, we fixed with the QoS, we fixed the situation where in the network, even a heavily congested network, still FTP or file transfer is running. So the network is being congested, and we can have a good quality audio, and same with video. Again, the point of the demo, we are done with the demo, by the way. Yeah, well, guys, with the audio quality, it's really hard sometimes to see or rather hear these effects. Link can really survive pretty tough networking conditions like the ones in the internet. But sometimes, believe it or not, that was my second point, in the enterprise networks, you do have these conditions because people are transferring files over the kind of narrow links, narrow wide area network links. And yes, that's why we need QoS, right? That's why you also need to know how to troubleshoot the QoS if necessary. Use things like link monitoring reports, use things like Netmon if necessary, and understand the principle. The principle number one, QoS is end-to-end. It's the link administrator responsibility, but it's also network administrator responsibility. You have to, and these two guys need to talk to each other. They are enemies, but they do have to talk to each other. Yes. Okay, so guys, I'm gonna switch to the presentation now, switch back, and we are going to actually, I had pretty nice slides that were intro to the demo, but we are going to skip them now because we are about to dive a little bit now in the second part of our session, and I will need to go through that really quickly, but I hope, well, I don't need that anymore. That's cool. So the network bandwidth for Link 2013. So I'm gonna go with you with a couple of things, but before I do, once again, the reference to our famous Link 2013 networking guide. And I would like to highlight two things here, among other 140 pages or so in that document, which I found to be a very interesting reading. The thing is, whenever you think about the bandwidth for the Link 2013, right? Yeah, we have to admit that there are almost no networks with infinite bandwidth resources. So we have to think about it. That's number one, right? The second is, it's not just about the bandwidth. It's also about the other networking conditions. And you have to realize that the bandwidth requirements may vary depending on the type of the call. Sometimes even networking conditions, Link has been designed to survive, which means he is doing things to survive. He's switching codecs, it switches codecs, it does certain things to survive bad networking conditions. Now, the important thing is also that we created tools which help you to do these bandwidth planning exercises, and we'll be getting there. But before you get to the kind of planning for the bandwidth, you should understand certain principles, certain things, what are the what are the bandwidth requirements of Link. And basically, it's easiest to refer to the previous version of Link because not that many things have changed. Actually, very few things have changed since Link 2013. We haven't changed that much of the bandwidth consumption for a SIP signaling, nor IAM, nor presence updates. Amount of kilobits per second for IAM and presence updates is still the same with the Link 2013 because people behave the same way. They were not going to start sending 2 or 5 times more IAMs right now just because they got 2013 client. Well, maybe at the very first moment, right? They want to announce, I'm on 2013 now. But later on, they will just use that normally. And, you know, that works the same way. Same with the audio, same with the multi-party audio like conferencing. With a certain exception, there is a new way of encoding audio in Link 2013, which it gets utilized when there is a link room system involved in either peer-to-peer or multi-party audio conference, which is J722 stereo encoding for the stereo effect coming to or from the link room system. But it's a minor change in the bandwidth estimation and quality. Now, please note, I'm not giving you the kilobits per second or whatever, because these are things that you can find out on TechNet. What I'm talking about are the principles here. So it's in desktop sharing also, that hasn't changed. What has changed dramatically, though, is the video. And obviously, that is caused by the fact that we have introduced a lot of new things when it comes to video in Link 2013. We have introduced new codec, H.264 SVC, as we know. Why there's SVC stereo? Wow. I'm sorry. That's the type on the slide. Now, we have also... there should be H.264 SVC, not stereo codec. Anyway, so we support plethora of resolutions now. In Link 2010, it was just 3 resolutions or 4 resolutions that RT video codec kind of supported. Now with 2013, there are like 13 resolutions that we support. And that changes the whole equation. And guess what? The multi-party video or famous gallery view or multi-view, if you wish, that changes the equation as well, because all of a sudden you have these many streams of video that are showing up in your Link client, and you know you have to somehow try to plan for it, right? So before you plan, let's try to understand how that thing works. And I will go really quickly to explain to you how the video streams look like. And the point is, I don't intend to cause the headache to you, but for the bandwidth calculations, you really need to understand these kind of things. At least try to understand the concepts. So for the peer-to-peer video, it's very simple. We have a video call from A to B, from Alice to Bob, and it's a video call, right? It's not just a picture. I just took a screenshot, but please understand that this is a video call. So basically, again, things there is like you have to consider things like multiple resolutions in different aspect ratios. The bandwidth requirements might differ depending on the size of the window. Things like network conditions also impact that. I will be discussing that in a moment. There is also additional bandwidth going on for the RTCP channel, which is additional. It's kind of like additional, like a monitoring channel going on top of on RTP on top of the video stream. I'm trying to make it complex, but I will simplify at the end, guys. Now, there is also RT video codec that might be involved, especially when you are in a situation when you have Link 2010 and Link 2013 clients simultaneously in your deployment, meaning if you are in migration kind of scenario. So now, impact of the video size. Actually, I should say impact of the size of the video window, video render window, right? It's you cannot underestimate that. People are going to change the size of the video window in Link. I'm starting the call. It's kind of small window. I would like to see you better. I'm going to extend the window. So guess what? I'm going to request a higher resolution video stream from the sender, right? My Link client will ask, can you, instead of like 240p, can you send me like maybe 720p? Things. And, you know, people are going to change that during the period of the call because all of a sudden, no, I don't want to see you kind of like on most of my screen. I now want to concentrate something different on my screen. So things change during the period of the call. We are not anymore in the era of the video calls, which were kind of constant, SIF always during all the time. No. Link 2013 is a variable type of video all the time, even for peer-to-peer. And also network impact on the video. Now, if network gets congested, if the, by the way, if you really want to know more about how the video window, or render window as we called it actually, impacts the video bandwidth, please go to Jeff Shard's session or watch it later after the conference. I believe the session is networking 305. The symbol is 305. Jeff gives an excellent overview of how things work in terms of video window sizes, right? Now, the second thing is the network impact on the video bandwidth, right? So you would think, okay, I have a stream of, like here in this case, 540p initially, right? So that's going to stay because I'm keeping the window the same size all the time during call. But guess what? Congestion is showing up. And, you know, we didn't care about the QoS, so congestion starts affecting my video stream. My video stream starts losing packets. What will happen at a certain moment in time is like, all right, there is too many. There is too many packets lost, and guess what? Video resolution gets changed because Link is trying to adapt to the conditions. I cannot anymore send 540p resolution, so I'm going to kind of go down. I'm going to, like, 360p, for example, in this case, which means I'm going to be sending less, but the idea is my resolution is slightly lower, but I can still probably push in enough of good frames through the network so, you know, the user is not kind of like experience like freezes or stuff like that, right? And then network condition change, so we are back to 540p maybe. Again, the point is bandwidth will fluctuate, right, because of network conditions. If you want to know something more about this, how that works exactly, what happens between this and this, what's the signaling exchange, what happens, come to our session tomorrow. That's Meet 401 on Thursday. We'll be doing a really, really, really deep video deep dive in these kind of situations. Now, here I need to come back to these diagrams with this session, with these streams, video streams, and I will just go quickly through them saying this is complex. So we have some video streams going from client A to B in conferences. Of course, B also sends its video streams like a B is on the bottom. So the red one is going up to the AVMCU. AVMCU multiplies these streams. These streams become like a nightmare if you think about the bandwidth calculations or actually bandwidth planning, because all of them can be of a different resolution depending on network conditions, window sizes, and everything. And on top of that, you have the temporal scalability, which can affect the video bandwidth because all of a sudden the client joins, which cannot do the 30 frames per second, but that's 15 frames per second. Yes, I'm making it hard for you guys. It's even harder. Link 2010 clients are joining. So now we are talking RT video clients, right? Also in the same conference. Man, this is tough. Now, one more thing, and will be over. So now, on top of video, we're also doing the data collaboration. Like, we are doing, like, a PowerPoint sharing. Or whiteboard, even whiteboard. Whiteboard doesn't consume that much of the bandwidth, right? It's just, like, from time to time, you're drawing something on it. Most of the time, it's idle. But it does consume the real estate on your screen. If you go whiteboard, if you go, like, a PowerPoint sharing or whatever type of data sharing, that's what I mean by data sharing, all of a sudden, your video is kind of, like, pushed to the top in a conference, or maybe pushed aside if you are doing like a peer-to-peer call, and now your real estate for that video stream is smaller. What does it mean? Smaller video resolution, less bandwidth. But then someone stops the data sharing and now go again higher bandwidth, even during the period of the same call. Now, once I made it really, really hard, there is actually one more thing. We also have multiple screens. I'm working with two screens. I know people are sometimes working with four screens. And, you know, you can disassociate data sharing from the video and just put it on one screen, the other screen. Then, you know, the video becomes bigger again. Those tiles, those little video squares become bigger. Guess what? More bandwidth, right? And this is tough. So how to avoid the headache of thinking about all this crap? We have tools. Now, before we go to tools, which are nice, let me just say that we had to come up with new way of thinking about this. Because old way of thinking about the video was, I'm having a SIF call, I'm having an HD call. You should not have this way of thinking anymore with Link 2013. You are having a video call. I want to know what will be the kind of like average size of the that call, average bandwidth consumption, sorry, from that call, during the period of the call. So we tried to estimate that. Initially, during our initial kind of like beta TEP program, right, we tried to measure that. And also Microsoft is measuring these kind of things from our own deployment. And we came up to this certain interesting conclusions that, you know, actually most of the peer-to-peer video calls, they are staying in a certain resolution. This is the kind of like, oops, and that's, now I did it, okay. So this is the majority of the calls are staying at a certain resolution. This is actually close to like 240p resolution. Simply speaking, people are keeping their video windows at the same size. Some people are going kind of bigger videos. Some people are doing adding collaboration to that data sharing. But we try to kind of like figure out what will be the distribution of these resolutions in a typical deployment. I'm not sure if these were typical, but we came up with certain conclusions. And we started to build a model around it. That's for the conferences, not for the peer-to-peer, but for conference. We also noticed that most of the people in the conferences, they are kind of like staying with like a one or two active video windows. Not all the five windows go video, although that's becoming more and more often, but like one, two are video windows out of five in a multi-view gallery, and then the other guys are on just photos, right? And guess what? Based on that, we started building a model. That model has been described on a TechNet. If you go on TechNet, you'll see these tables there. These tables give you the indication what would be the typical size of the video stream, right, in a peer-to-peer call with a Link 2013 client. That's 460 kilobits per second. That's come from this kind of approach. We don't know what would be the resolution during the call, but we've seen, observed that, you know, in typical enterprise environments, that might be like that. So this is a good planning number to start, right? Very much like for the conferences, we estimated that typically we receive 260 kilobits per second and we send 270 kilobits per second. Again, good planning number to start from. Now, if you want to go slightly deeper, because you might not agree with this approach, right? Like you may say, no, my users are not like Microsoft users. My users are using video differently. They go full screen almost all the time. Yes, there are some users like that. Some organizations go like that. Then you want to do a little bit of more planning. Again, Jeff, during his session, he gave a great overview how to understand that. But luckily, you don't have to do a manual calculations because that tool, that tool here, which is called Link Bandwidth Calculator, can do it for you. It does have embedded all the logic that does the calculation of the video bandwidth consumption, well, very much like any other modality, consumption for the bandwidth or any other link modalities, but it has all the logic behind all these things I was explaining. There are lots of knobs that you can turn in the tool and say, my users are behaving differently than Microsoft typical model. My users are going full HD almost all the time. It's not reality as we see it today because of various reasons, constraints on the CPU, screens, but if you want to model the network bandwidth utilization for video link 2013, simply speaking, go with that tool. And just type number of users. Well, read the manual first. Not many people do it these days, but please do it. And then type number of users, and you'll get your results. Unfortunately, before I stop, there are some special cases, which bandwidth calculator doesn't necessarily take care of, and they are more and more often happening. So you might get some headache, I'm afraid. So the bandwidth for link room systems. We are seeing people getting really excited by link room systems. They start deploying them. So basically, they behave very much like a regular client. If you think about link room system, it is the Link 2013 client, except some things. I've already told you about the audio. That's one of the things. Well, the other thing is LRS has very big screens, right? It doesn't mean it has a bigger resolution than like your laptop could have. It will go full HD on those screens. But because this thing called LRS was made for room video experience, we are kind of like having certain views there, which by definition, they force the video consumption, the link room system, to be bigger because we are running video tiles kind of like in a video suppression mode there, sorry, UI suppression mode there on the link room systems, which means we are not showing the roster on the screen, right? We are just showing video on the screen of LRS. So we are not wasting that real estate for like a roster, for buttons there. There is a special touch screen sitting on the table for that, right? Meaning video can go really bigger on those screens. Not that the screen is bigger, it's just the resolution of the screen on the LRS can be bigger. That means a bigger video consumption. That is something that you would have to model kind of like manually, right? And if you are into the two-screen LRS, that can go even higher because now your multi-view gallery can span on these two screens, meaning your video tiles will become even bigger. Bandwidth consumption to LRS can be bigger. That's the point, right? So unfortunately, the link bandwidth calculator doesn't handle that. You would have to do some manual calculations. Again, the Jeff's session covered it really nicely. And I see you had a question here. Yes, so you can apply the QS just for LRS role as well. Yeah, you can apply the QS policy kind of selectively if you wish. And I'll be glad to take it offline later on because we are slightly running out of time to explain to you how that can work. But yes, the answer is you can apply the QS slightly differently in terms of, yes, LRS is different than other clients. Okay, the other point of headache is unfortunately link mobile clients, if you wish, which are kind of like also becoming interesting way of consuming video, especially video, because it's all about the video in these days and the mobility is the big thing. Now, it's a slightly different kind of thing, though, for the video. Actually, because of the real estate limitations, right? I mean, on this screen, in that video device or some other, mobile device, or some mobile device, you simply have, it's not about the size of the screen again, it's about the resolution of the screen. It doesn't necessarily be, it will not necessarily be even 720p resolution of video possible. Plus, you have the CPU limitations there, plus you have the, sometimes you have some other limitations for the mobile devices that come from the inherently from the link client, how it's deployed. The point is, link mobile clients behave kind of differently than link 2013 full client or rich clients. And you know, it could be a very, very long description what's different there, and we'll be glad to explain that in more details. The point at this stage is to understand that the link mobile clients from the bandwidth consumption for the video, they are different than regular clients. All right, before I let you go, actually let you ask questions, I just need to summarize the whole presentation. So the objective that we had here at that session was to give you the idea that QS as a broad thing is necessary to provide the necessary quality of experience from Link on today's enterprise network because congestion can be happening in there. The second was, the point is, was to discuss the complexities, unfortunately, but also the ways of, to help you with these complexities when it comes to bandwidth, modeling bandwidth consumption or utilization of the bandwidth. And the takeaway that I would like you to take from this session is basically, you have to do the proper network planning in terms of QS of bandwidth for the enterprise networks if you want to succeed with the link deployment because we've seen too many of those cases, customers coming back to us saying, audio from link doesn't work. Yes, it will not work if your network is congested and you don't have a QS, or if you miscalculated the bandwidth, you thought that the link will be consuming 100, your QS was saying 100, but the link is actually consuming 120, right? So you need to do these things properly, but that's not that difficult. We have tools for that, and now you have the understanding of these things, hopefully. So in order to help you understand these things, I would like to provide you a couple of references. Of course, I'm not going to discuss them, but basically there's networking guide, which we mentioned a couple of times. I believe 170 pages of good reading for your bed experience. And then lots of articles, the bandwidth calculator, and with that, I would like to finish the session and give you the ability for the Q&A. Yes, there's the first question. Could you just come to the mic? That'll be easier for the people who are recording and, you know, for the people who will be listening to the session later on and ask a question. That'll be, and everyone else, if you could just come to the mic if you have a question, that'll be easier. Thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I guess.
Yes. So excellent presentation. Thank you very much for both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You talked about the fact that there are different types of clients, types of endpoints. So two questions. One about internet-connected endpoints or internet connections in general. Is there any sense or concept of QoS via WAN optimization? There are like Blue Coat, other partners come up with all kinds of things for link. So traditionally, we've been thinking that over the internet, you don't worry about QoS. That's one question.
Let's take both questions.
Okay.
Second question about hard phones. So we also mentioned that for link, you shouldn't be looking at layer two. With hard phone, is there any value in looking at VLAN or QoS?
The IP phones, our IP phones, mark the traffic by default with the DHCP values. So again, it's like another endpoint, any other endpoint, that when the traffic reaches the one will be prioritized if you are doing...
But I meant, is there an opportunity to still use VLANs like we did in the
Yes, screen? You can, right? We have the LLDP configuration that you can do a similar configuration to VLAN priority with our IP phones, but we don't see customers doing that.
I would say the most important thing that you have to have a coherent story about the QoS. And the coherent story is today they're using DHCP, right? So once you can start marking your audio traffic in your IP phones, and you can just tell the IP phone, the link, actually we should be saying link phone edition phones, if you wish, from the link server, please use that DHCP value, and that's the same DHCP value that you'll be using from link clients, then you're good, right? There is no real kind of like advantage of using VLANs or LDP unless your environment that already has them. And then there you go. You can.
Generally simpler. Like
yes.
Like he said, because
yes.
You don't have to worry when you're sending these phones to the remote sites.
Yes.
You have them configured. And
yes.
All.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, yeah. For the edge part, or say for the internet part.
The internet, there is no QoS in the internet, right? So as far as the traffic reach the edge server, our edge server, we can mark the traffic there coming inside.
Unless you want to prioritize traffic within a pipe.
Yeah. So here's the thing. First of all, you have to recognize that there are two legs of such a call or conversation when it comes to like remote user. First is like from the user in the internet to the point of entry, which is called link edge. And then there is link edge to the destination, whatever destination could be, right? The other link client internally in the enterprise network or maybe the conferencing server. So for that second leg, definitely go QoS because it's the same kind of like approach like internal link client calling link client. Now for that first leg of the internet, there is really no point of doing the QoS there unless, for some reasons, you figure out that doing marking there can help you, like you are kind of like cheating with your service provider, whatever, but not really.
So it's not common anyways.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
Any more questions? Guys, I hope we did not... Oh, yes, there is a question. Yes, please come to the mic. Thank you.
For call emission control, are you supposed to use worst case for your planning purposes? And how do you create a priority for specific users to have QoS over another user?
Right. So for the first part of the question, whether for the call emission control policies, I believe, right, the bandwidth policies, all that stuff, how to approach the kind of like planning on amount of traffic necessary for call emission control. We haven't touched on the call emission control, but the basic answer to that was is I believe we need to be using the bandwidth that is required for the worst case scenario, right? Not a typical bandwidth. And you'll find those like a maximum amount of bandwidth for the call, and you'll find those values in one of the, I reference one of those pages on TechNet, right? So that's the answer. And the second part of the question was, remind me, was about the...
How do you prioritize call and mission control for a user over any other user that's at a remote site?
Yes, so you would like to have like a different users in a call and mission control context with the different priorities, if you wish, right? Like some users can still make a calls, and some others
can't.
Is that the question?
Well, you have two cases. One is you have a VP that you want to make sure that call goes through no matter what. And then the other case mm-hmm. comes into play with large room systems. You want to make sure a large room system,
correct,
a link room system, I should say, LRS,
yes,
can place a call at any given time,
yes,
and has priority over a regular point call,
I guess.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm not sure if we can differentiate the link room system from
user policies. I guess we can. So there is we are not sure, as you can hear, but there is certain let's say check that can you can apply on a policy level at the
there is an override. There is a check that's called override policy that you will ignore the CAC policy.
Yes.
So if you want a user to send a call, even if you reach the limit of the CAC policy, you can do that.
Yes.
If they override the CAC policy, aren't they going to affect the quality of all the other calls that are going on at the same time?
It will, if you did not provision the bandwidth properly. But that's the idea, kind of like, I still want that call.
So then you have to take that away from the overall bandwidth of all the other calls?
And you have to provision for that kind of like a situation, probably, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Provision in advance for that situation.
Yes. Yeah, we don't have necessary kind of like multiple levels of users or devices in terms of commission control. It's like just an override, if you wish, executive override. All right, and yes, we can take that discussion later on offline if you would. Okay, you had a question.
Yeah, I had a question. You didn't show us on that router. I'm assuming you're using a priority statement, so you're using low latency queuing, right?
That's exactly what I use when I kind of like fixed network the first time.
Yeah.
I have a priority queue.
You had that service policy, and it was blocking his traffic back. And that's the problem we've got right now. Mm-hmm. Is the core of our network needs to be refreshed. You know, it's possible we have switches that can't support him.
Right.
You know, MLS, right? Mm-hmm. So it gets in there, it gets zeroed out. So we're going to have to market the edge. And then my second question, or really is more just seeing your slide there. When we're talking bandwidth guarantees, QoS doesn't give you a guarantee. It's QoS and CAC together.
Yes. Yeah.
We can override the EFQ.
Yeah. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's a complement, right? QoS on its own will not guarantee the quality. If you want to guarantee quality at 100%, you need both. Call mission control to control the amount of bandwidth and QoS to prioritize.
Yes.
So you know our situation. You and I have spent some time together before, but we, in the dedicated environment, that CAC's not there. So it's really an exercise of over-provision, right? That's all we can do.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah, at least in the office where I dedicated, I guess that's absolutely
that's correct.
That's correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. This is one of the limitations of
the service which is provided from
this. Great demo, though. I'd like to see, though, if we could choke that down a little bit and put two calls on there and overrun that EFQ and show what CAC does.
Yes, we could do that. It's just that the guys, you know, really that the environment that we are running, not that we cannot handle two calls, it's really hard to catch, even if you could hear during the demo, it's really hard to catch the difference. Thank you. Especially since we run it remotely from Redmond over the internet here. Yeah.
It's challenging.
Some other questions? If not, you have a question?
The mic is not working, so... Here.
Oh, you might just shout and we'll repeat the question for the recording then.
Yeah.
Correct. Yes. Ha! Why would they, right? Yes, what do we do, right? Yeah, so the question is basically if the network does not trust the DSCP markings done by the clients, by the client machines, what do you do? Well, basically, then you have to talk to networking people and say, all right, you don't like our DSCP, we are not going to do that. But here is the range of ports that we'll be using, because that's the range of ports that you know. And Mr. Networking Guy, please prioritize these ports, because our link clients are going to be sending audio on the ports from this to this, video on ports from this to this. And you have control over it using the link administrator link administrative tools, and basically that's how you do it. You just agree with networking guys and, well, actually enforce upon them. These are the ports. You guys need to prioritize the audio. Then there is a video. And so on and so on. Because you have control over four types of ports. Audio, video, application sharing, like desktop sharing, and file transfers. And they can do whatever they want with these ports. Sure. Go ahead. Oh, that's absolute. Yes.
Okay, stopping the user from setting up a policy to do so, file transfer to DHCP 46.
Yes. Yeah. So basically, absolutely yes, because the user would have to have administrative privileges to change that. We are assuming that normally you have the workstation that doesn't have them, so you are not able to do it. Now, of course, realizing that that's not necessarily always the case, right? There are ways of making sure that people are not playing games with you. These ways, unfortunately, involve, again, discussion with networking people, because what they need to do is say, you are sending the traffic marked DHCP 46 to me. Cool. What are the ports? Are these the ports that you are telling me? If the combination of these two factors is there, so then I'm going to allow things.
So you can do QoS by DHCP and port at the same time.
Yes. So I have a customer who is going even further. He is trying to control source ports, destination ports, DHCPs. That sounds like a paranoia to me, but yes, you can do it if you want. Thank you.
Can you set the MAC client to DHCP tag?
The current version of the MAC client, which linked to leaked May 2011, doesn't have a provision for kind of like a there is no way to enforce that that link client will tell the Mac OS to use the special DHCP value. However, if I'm not mistaken,
the new version.
See, and we stop at that.
Could you say if it's on the roadmap for the Mac client?
Can you send me an email and I'll get back to you, because I have a presentation with the Mac 2013 client. And I can't remember exactly if it's there or not. But I think I don't want to say yes, because I'm not 100% sure.
Thank you.
No problem.
Guys, realizing that we are over time, I would like to thank you very much for your attention. We are still here for the break. If you want to ask any more questions, then feel free to come to us. Thanks very much for your patience with us, with the demo and everything. Have a great LinkedIn conference.
Thank you.